Tonight on Straight Talk, Chris Dudley returns to Oregon politics, taking aim once again at the governor's office.
You need change. When you're literally 50th in education, that just hurts. Our state should not be in that situation. When you're 47th in job creation, 47th in place to do business, addiction, homelessness. We have serious, serious issues in this state. I think it's time for an outsider that can come in and say, hey, let's work together. Let's come up with serious solutions and address this.
Dudley shares his plan to tackle the state's biggest challenges and why he believes now is the moment for a Republican governor. And as we look ahead to November, a new book takes a closer look at the legacy of Oregon's last Republican governor.
So when I was doing the book, it eventually occurred to me, you know, people still move to Oregon to live in Tom McCall, famous Tom McCall, who used to be at KGW. They used to move here to live in his state, the beach bill, bottle returns, that kind of thing. But they work in Vicatia's economy.
Author and political analyst Jim Moore breaks down Atiyah's impact and what lessons his time in office holds for today's gubernatorial race. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Stephanie Domerat. The race for the Republican nomination for Oregon governor is heating up. One of those candidates is Chris Dudley, the 2010 Republican nominee and former Portland trailblazer. Dudley ran against Democrat John Kitzhaber in 2010 and lost by just 1.5 points. Now he's back, hoping to win the GOP primary and face Governor Tina Kotek this November. Mr. Dudley, thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Stephanie. It's great to be here and excited to be here. And with the energy going on in our campaign, which, as you know, we launched a couple weeks ago and off and running.
Yes,
so thank
exactly.
You.
We're coming up on just almost 3 months here. So let's start first. What prompted your decision to run for governor now?
Well, as you mentioned, was in the closest election in the past 70 years in 2010. And it was a great process. And I've been active following what's happening. At that time, it said I wasn't going to run again. My wife and I agreed until the kids got out of high school. And I've been doing other things, but just with what's happening in Oregon, we need change. When you're literally 50th in education, that just hurts. Our state should not be in that situation. When you're 47th in job creation, 47th in place to do business, addiction, homelessness, we have serious, serious issues in this state. I think it's time for an outsider that can come in and say, hey, let's work together. Let's come up with serious solutions and address this.
We mentioned you faced Governor Kitzhaber in 2010, lost narrowly. It's been nearly 40 years since Oregon had a Republican governor. Why do you think the time is now that people would elect a Republican?
Well, yeah, and as you say, I do the basketball analogy. It felt like we lost in double overtime. We were up Tuesday night and lost on Thursday in 2010. What I saw then was run on a message that crosses party lines, core issues, and connect with everybody, whether it's Republican, Independent, Democrat, and we're going to do the same thing now. And I'd say what's even more so than 2010, there was we're heading the wrong direction. But right now, my friends, my Democratic friends, my Independent friends as well say this is a train wreck right now, what we're doing. We need to fix it, we need to change, and we need to change course quickly and have a message that unifies rather than divides is critically important right now.
How do you feel you can cross the aisle and speak to those Democrats in the state, in Portland or other cities?
Yeah, my whole life I've worked with people across, you know, it's kind of background in sports. My family have politically left and right, and be able to work together, That's I've lived my life that way. And it's running on messages that resonate across party lines. My focus is education, economy, livability, which includes affordability and safety. And it doesn't matter what party you are. You want good schools for your kids. You want to have available jobs. We want safe streets, safe trails, safe parks. Those are things that we want affordable. We want our kids to be able to afford to live where they grew up. Those things resonate across party lines.
And we'll talk more specifically about how you think we should do that. But first, the Republican primary, as we mentioned, is heating up. There's a lot of candidates right now who want to be that GOP nominee, including former gubernatorial nominee Christine Drazen, Marion County Commissioner Danielle Bethel, State Representative Ed Deal. How do you differ from these candidates who are running now?
Well, besides being a little taller, I'm outsider. Outsider and business background. Those are the big differences. I think the time is now. I think people are so tired of the bickering, the name-calling, fear-mongering that we see. We're living on the drugs of fear and anger right now, and I think people are tired of it. And I think we need to have somebody from the outside who can bring people together. Salem's problems will not be solved by somebody from Salem. We need somebody from the outside who has experience. We haven't had a governor that has business experience in 40 years, since Vicatia. We are at a crucial point where, you know, given my background of whether it was negotiating billion-dollar deals as treasurer of the NBA Players Union, whether it was creating a company, whether it was being CEO, chairman of the board of a medical device company here in Beaverton, having that business background makes a big difference. Having a degree in economics from Yale, having that makes sense if we're trying to restore our economy to have that background, I think, is critically important.
You've emphasized livability and education as your top priorities, but if you were governor today, what would be the very first thing that you would do or try to tackle?
Well, and I would say they're all three equally important when I say livability, education, economy. So all three are critically important. Start off with education. On day one, I would say we're in a state of emergency in education. To me, it is a state of emergency when you are literally ranked 50th in testing for fourth grade. Fourth grade is it's not better as you go up, or 47th or whatever it is in the 40s as you go through high school. And it is, when I ran in 2010, I talked about the education of today is your economy of tomorrow. And there's, you know, give you the statistics, but the stories behind it. As I'm traveling the state and literally going from the four corners of the state, as we were talking about earlier, talking to teachers, talking to parents, it's not, we have good kids, we have good teachers, but our system is broken right now. There is no reason at all that Oregon should be 50th in education.
What specific thing do you see around improving education that could help?
There's a number of things. I'll start with a couple. When I mentioned fourth grade, and fourth grade's so important because if you're not literate by fourth grade, you're four times as likely to not graduate from high school, up to a 70% incarceration rate. It's a critical time. And the good news in this is there are solutions. You saw what happened with Mississippi, they call it the Mississippi Miracle, but it's not really a miracle. They focused on the science of reading. And we have to, and a number of states are doing it. Mississippi went from 47th in reading to top five, and we can do the same. And it's focused on the science of reading. Get back to phonics. Another area is class time. Oregon is dead last in the country in class time. And I give the sports analogy there, where if your team is in last place, should you have the least amount of practices of any other team? And most people would obviously say no. And right now, if a kid from Washington, kid from Oregon meet, the kid from Washington has had the equivalent of one school year more than the kid from Oregon. It's because we have the shortest school years and the highest absentee rate in the country.
Let's talk more about your other priority, livability. So what do you think should be done in Oregon to improve livability for Oregonians?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Affordability is one, and we're going to look at housing. One part I talk about is it's often noted, especially here in Portland, that we have the second highest tax rate in the country next to New York City. But what's often overlooked and not talked about is working class. 50% of Oregonians, over 50% of Oregonians are living month to month. And I understand what the stress that built. I went through that as a kid when my mom's car broke down. How are we gonna pay for that? What are we gonna do? And there's so much stress, so much anxiety with that. We have the highest tax rate in the country for somebody making under $100,000, and I wanna reduce that tax rate.
I wanted to ask you about that. So if that's the case, that would mean lost revenue for the state. So how would you counteract that, or what would you plan to cut to make up for that?
Well, I think, you know, and I think we're in the wrong mindset where we're trying to get a bigger and bigger slice of the pie of a shrinking to stagnant slice of the pie and a shrinking to stagnant pie versus a smaller slice of a growing pie. We need to bring in business. We need to embrace business. We need to help businesses grow. And I'm tired of talking to people who are talking about their businesses expanding elsewhere or even moving. We need to focus and have grow the economy. That's how you address it.
That was another thing you had mentioned, that you want to bring more new jobs to Oregon and offer better wages. How do you plan on doing that?
You do that by encouraging business and competition. And when you saw it during COVID, when there's competition, wages go up. And we need new jobs. We need to embrace the companies that are here. I can't tell you, it blows my mind sometimes some of the bigger companies say they never hear from the governor's office. We need to focus on the economy, focus on jobs, get Portland going again. There's so much we can do to drive our economy. And as governor, you don't outsource the role of prosperity. As governor, you are the chief prosperity officer. I will be the chief prosperity officer as governor. I will bring jobs back to Oregon. That is your role. That is your job. You have to sell your state. And it's critically important we do that.
How do you specifically support businesses, though? Like, what kind of policy or what kind of actions around that do you feel like would improve the jobs?
Well, there's a number. The first one is do no harm, which sounds simple, but from business owners across the state, every legislative session coming up, they're like, what's coming next? What craziness is coming next? And how do we stop that? And so as governor, you have the power of the pen to say, I can look business in the face and say, it's not going to get worse. Now we're going to make it get better. And focus on those areas. Work on places where you can improve it. As governor, you have a number of tools, from the power of the purse to the power of the pulpit, power of the pen, but also the one that's often overlooked is the power of appointment. There's close to 300 boards and commissions in our state, and not one person on any of those boards and commissions has been appointed by a Republican governor. Not one. We need to restore some balance. And if nothing else, on those boards and commissions, you should have people on them that are actually impacted by those rules and regulations coming down. And just it's just about restoring balance. It's not going from here to here. It's just restoring some balance and common sense in the middle.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about a national issue that's top of mind for many Oregonians, immigration enforcement and the actions of ICE we've seen in the state here in Oregon. How do you feel enforcement is going so far in the state?
I think it's been a very tough situation here, and I give blame on both sides. I think we have to do a better job of lowering the temperature. I get frustrated where it seems like our elected officials are knocking each other out of the way to get to the podium to escalate temperature and get people riled up. I think Oregonians as a whole, I think, I don't know, 80% plus would agree that if it's a violent sex offender, murder, felon who's here illegally, they should be deported. I also think most of Oregonians would agree that kids should not be scared to go to school. And I think there's a balance in there. And we have to lower the temperature and come up with real solutions.
What role do you see the governor playing in immigration in the state of Oregon?
I think you have to work with federal. It's a federal office, federal role that we have to be able to have that communication. And I think there's ways of doing that. If you look at other states, you know, take a Pennsylvania with Governor Shapiro or Michigan with Governor Whitmer. They're no friends of the president, but they don't have the same issues that we're having here. We have to be able to lower the temperature, work together, and say, let's address this in a reasonable manner. And it's gotten out of hand on both sides. Federal officers should not feel threatened, but nor should citizens feel uncomfortable either. There's a balance here. We need everybody to follow the state rules, federal rules, our Constitution, and that goes for officers and it goes for protesters and citizens as well.
I want to ask you about the Oregon Sanctuary Law, which is different than some other states, and it's basically that law enforcement will not, work alongside immigration officers or to give information about people. Where do you see the sanctuary laws in Oregon, or do you support the sanctuary laws? And as governor, would you make any changes or try
to? Well, I support what the citizens have approved and always will support what citizens approve. I think changes can be made to it. There's been executive orders and that sort of thing you can look at. But more importantly, it's how do we How do we work together and lower that temperature? That's critically important. And I, again, this gets back to where I think as an outsider, it's so important to be able to have that perspective, not just the partisan bickering, is how do we address this seriously? How do we lower the temperature? How do we make this work?
What is one thing that you think is working well in Salem right now?
Ooh, that's a tough one. what's working well in Salem right now? I'd have to get back to you on that because with this session, I'm not sure what's there are some, but I'd have to think about it. But I think more importantly, it's what will work well in Salem going forward. And going forward, when we actually talk to each other and able to bring people together to come up with real solutions.
Okay, Chris Dudley, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, political analyst Jim Moore joins us to discuss his new book on Oregon's 32nd governor, Vic Atiya, exploring his legacy and what it reveals about Oregon politics today. Stay with us. And welcome back to Straight Talk. As we mentioned in the first half of our show, the race for Oregon governor is heating up, especially the fight for who will land on the Republican ticket and face Tina Kotek in November. Now, Oregon hasn't elected a Republican governor in nearly four decades. The last one was Vic Atiya, and a new book takes a fresh look at how he led Oregon through a period of major change and what his legacy says about where the state is now. Joining us now to talk about the book, political analyst Jim Moore, author of Atiya, Governor Vic Atiya, and the transformation of Oregon. Mr. Moore, thanks for being with us today.
It's great to be with you.
I want to dive in first and ask you, why did you decide to write this book?
Well, I've known Vic for a long time. I knew him in the late 1990s and then, you know, bumped into him. But around 2012, he donated his archive to Pacific University, where I was on the faculty. And so I was deeply involved in that. And so in 2013, he asked me to write the book. So that's why I decided to write, because he asked me.
Wow.
It's like an incredible honor.
Absolutely.
And then he didn't pay me. I wasn't working for him. Our first meeting, he said, look, I'm depending on you, because he'd seen me over the years doing this kind of stuff. And so he said, I trust you to do warts and all what's going on and what his governorship is about.
So let's talk about the transformation of Oregon, of course, in the title. What is this transformation that you're referring to?
So very simple. Before Vic Atiya, Oregon's economy was a timber economy. When you looked at the big manufacturing clusters, when you looked at what Oregon produced, its place in the world, it was based on timber, 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 and then some wheat from eastern Oregon. The timber industry was going into a decline in late 70s, just as he was being elected governor. And then we had a huge recession in 1979-ish, 1980 to about 1983, the worst recession we've had. So he said, we got to put the economy back together. The transformation was, let's find other things to rely on besides timber, which was in decline anyway. And so he became known as Trader Vic. He would go around the world and recruit companies to come here, not to just buy Oregon products, but to establish factories to employ people. That's why the Silicon Forest in Hillsboro exists. There was already Tektronix, there was already Intel just starting up there, but Vic is the one who got Japanese companies and West German companies and all these people to come there and basically create the Silicon Forest.
And Intel that we just featured last week.
Exactly. Yeah. So he was there as Intel was beginning going up, and now we're looking out there saying, wow, is Intel going to make it?
Yeah.
So it's been, and that's a 50-year process, but he was there crucially at the beginning.
Wow. Do you see parallels to that time and today?
Yeah, what we just talked about. Oregon went from being basically a one-and-a-half industry state with timber to a one-and-a-half industry state, especially with high tech in all its forms. We need to have more places where our economy can grow, things we can do. And so we've also seen that the timber industry, when it left in the 1980s because of that huge recession, rural Oregon, small-town Oregon, has never replaced that. And so that's an issue right now. Just think, the Trump administration is just saying, we're going to reopen the forest so we can log at the levels we did in the 1960s. Why? Because of the people in those towns who've been hurting now for over 40 years.
The timber industry.
The timber industry.
Yeah. Well, Atiya is often remembered as Oregon's last Republican governor. But what else beyond party labels do you think is his legacy?
Well, clearly it's the grand transformation. But he was also the first governor to push things like strong civil rights legislation, hate crime legislation. So those kinds of things, which are still important around now, people debate them, how far they go, all those kinds of things. He was also a governor who was deeply involved with things that are kind of surprising. He was a Republican who cared about the environment, but only if he went fishing there. So big parts of the Deschutes River access because of work that Vic Atiyah did. A crucial player in the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area and putting that all together. He was also involved in issues dealing with not just timber, but the fishing industry and how it changed and things like that, but things that we all live with. So when I was doing the book, it eventually occurred to me, you know, people still move to Oregon to live in Tom McCall, famous Tom McCall, who used to be at KGW. They used to move here to live in his state, the beach bill. Bottle returns, that kind of thing, but they work in Vic Atiyah's economy. Hmm.
Let's talk about how he won elections in your mind when there were more Democrats than Republicans in Oregon.
Yeah, so he ran for governor in 74, 78, and 82. 74 and 78, Democrats outnumbered Republicans by 20%.
Wow.
Right now it's 9%. Okay, in 1982, it went down to about 13%, but still Democrats had a huge lead. He lost the 74 election, the only election he ever lost, but he won in 78, and he won overwhelmingly in 1982. It was interesting because he always said, the way we win the elections, we get all the Republicans to turn out, but the math says that won't work. So what did he do? He was showing his competence. He'd worked in the business community for a long time, Atiyah Brothers Carpets. But he got people to really pay attention to his business experience and what was going on, especially in that 1982 election, that horrible recession going on. He basically said, I'm the one who can help people figure out the changes that we need to make. The Democratic opponent, Ted Kulongoski, who later served two terms of his own, my Democratic opponent doesn't have that expertise. So his expertise and the times of economic uncertainty. The economic uncertainty, kind of like what we're feeling right now, especially 1978. It's like the economy's going okay, but we don't feel it.
Yeah. So what have we seen since Atiyah was governor that we've now seen almost 40 years of Democrats in Salem?
Yeah. So Vic is basically seen as the last of the moderate Republicans who won office. So before him was Tom McCall, before that was Mark Hatfield. So these moderate Republicans, as Vic is winning election in 78, and then what happens nationally? Ronald Reagan wins the presidency in 1980. The Republican Party begins to shift to the right. Vic never made that shift. In fact, he had a very public spat with the president in the 1982 election. Really fascinating. And governor and Republicans in Oregon primarily went to the right. And the electorate still has not gone with them to the right. If anything, it stayed centrist and maybe gone a little bit to the left as the Democrats have won time and time and time again.
We only have a little bit of time, so I want to ask you, do you think there is a place right now as we see the race for the Republican ticket heating up and crowding here that a Republican could win the governor?
It's really, really tough. And it's not just because Democrats outnumber Republicans, but the biggest single group is unaffiliated voters, and they're up for grabs. The other big thing is the governor's race in Oregon is always in an off year for the president, and the president's party always takes a big hit in those off-year elections. Donald Trump is the president. Republicans are going to take a hit.
Okay, and for our viewers who want to learn more about this book, it's a great accomplishment. How can they learn more and how can they get it?
Sure, so you can get it at the Oregon Historical Society bookstore. You can get it at the Oregon Capitol gift shop. You can buy it from Amazon. You can go to your own bookstore. You can say, I want to order it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Not a stranger, of course, to KGW, but we appreciate having you in as an author now today. Mr. Moore, thank you.
You're welcome.
And before we go tonight, I'd like to make a brief personal announcement. This is my last show as host of Straight Talk. It has been an honor to be in this seat and cover some of the most important topics to our community. I've learned so much on this show, and I hope you have too. Thank you so much for tuning in each week. Thank you for trusting me as I tried my best to ask the questions you at home would ask. We are better as a community when we are informed. and I hope we can continue to have important conversations like those here on Straight Talk. Thank you again for watching. Our wonderful Tim Gordon will take over as host starting next week. Have a great night and be well.